The first chapter of Deuteronomy still, and last time we'd gotten down to about the 31st verse. And the main thing that our study is centering upon now is the time that the children of Israel are in the wilderness. Moses is recounting this to the people and as a reminder before they go into the land of Canaan. And the part of that wilderness adventure that we'd gotten to last time was where the Israelites had come up to Kadesh Barnea. And there they had sent out the 12 spies to spy out the land of Canaan to determine if they could take the land or determine what method they would have to adopt in order to take the land. And the spies came back with their report, and 10 of the spies said they could not take it. 2 of the spies, Caleb and Joshua, said they could take it. And this was certainly 100% against God's will. God had told them that the land was theirs. He did intend for them to have it, and he intended for them to take it now. And so they rebelled against God. So our narrative in Deuteronomy 1 is in the midst of this rebellion against the will of God. Here the children of Israel are refusing to go into the land of Canaan. They've been in the wilderness now for some 11 months or so. It'd be about 12 months now because the spies were in the land for 40 days. And they should have been well ready to go into the land. But as we see every time of rebellion that these people encounter, we can also see the reaction that God has, the consequences that it has upon the people, and we should learn a lesson for our own selves. So here we are in Deuteronomy 1, the 31st verse. Well, let's go back to the 29th verse. They were saying, "This people is greater than we are, and we can't take the land." "Then I said unto you, dread not, neither be afraid of them. The Lord your God, which goeth before you, he shall fight for you, according to all that he did for you in Egypt before your eyes. And in the wilderness, where thou hast seen how that the Lord thy God bare thee, as a man doth bear his son, in all the way that you went, until you came into this place. Yet in this thing ye did not believe the Lord your God." Now God had borne them up to this time. He provided everything that they needed. They'd had the water to drink. They'd had the manna provided. They'd had the laws given. All the protection, all the needs of life were met up till now. But he says, "Yet you did not believe the Lord your God." Now that's the main primary problem that the people had then. It's the main problem we have today. If we can just get our minds to be so occupied that we don't have time to think about and to deal with God, then the first thing you know, we're not believing God. Oh, we have a belief, all right, but this belief is not strong enough to have an influence over us so that it dictates and governs our actions. And so in that sense, we're really not believing, because your belief is only as strong as your actions are. It's not enough to believe something. You must live it. You must commit yourself to it. And so they didn't believe God. They didn't believe that God would allow them to conquer the land. They didn't believe they could go in and take the giants who live there. They didn't believe they could move in and rout these other nationalities out of their home country, which is what it really amounted to. But God had promised them that they could and that he would help them. It was time for it to happen. It was their land, been given to them ever since the time of Abraham, and they didn't believe God. They just simply didn't believe God. There comes a time in all of our lives in which our belief in God has to extend beyond what we can logically see according to nature. Logically, according to nature, they felt like they weren't ready to take it. They were not up to this great encounter of entering into Canaan as the aggressor. But if they had believed in God, they would have gone beyond what their logic told them, and they would have gone strictly on the faith and belief in what God told them. Now, there comes time when we have to do that. Well, there's a consequence for not believing God. There's a consequence for not obeying God, and we're going to deal with that here in this lesson. "Yet in this thing you did not believe the Lord your God, who went in the way before you, to search you out a place to pitch your tents in fire by night, to show you by what way you should go, and in a cloud by day. So God was with them all the time. He led them in a fire by night. He led them with a cloud by day. He showed them where to pitch their tents. And the Lord heard the voice of your words, and was wroth, and sware, saying, surely there shall not one of these men of this evil generation see that good land which I swear to give unto your fathers, save Caleb. And he goes on. Well, we want to pause there for a minute. None of these men were to see the land now. God had sworn in his wrath that none of them were to see the land. We want to turn back now and illuminate this situation more fully in the book of Numbers. We'll go back to Numbers, the 14th chapter, and we're going to see where the spies had given their report. We're not going to cover that. That's in the 13th chapter. And how that the people then cried up against Moses and Aaron and Caleb and Joshua. Verse 6 of chapter 14 of Numbers. And Joshua the son of Nun, and Caleb the son of Jephunneh, which were all of them that searched the land, rent their clothes. And they spake unto all the company of the children of Israel, saying, the land in which we pass through to search it is an exceeding good land. If the Lord delight in us, then he will bring us into this land and give it us, a land which floweth with milk and honey. Only rebel ye not against the Lord, neither fear ye the people of the land, for they are bread for us, and their defense is departed from them, and the Lord is with us, fear them not. Now, Caleb and Joshua are just telling it like it is. They're saying, well, these people, we can take them. They're bread for us. Their defense is departed from them. The Lord's with us. Fear them not. So you can see why the Lord had a special feeling there for Caleb and Joshua. They stood up for him in the face of all obstacles. They stood up for the Lord. They did sanctify the Lord before these people. But all the congregation bade stone them with stones. And the glory of the Lord appeared in the tabernacle of the congregation before all the children of Israel. So what did the people say? They wanted to stone them with stones. They wouldn't hear any more of this. They would not listen to what they had to say. They were going to put them to death. But the glory of the Lord appeared in the tabernacle of the congregation before all the children of Israel. Now when things got into a real crisis, it seemed that here the glory of the Lord appeared in this tabernacle. And that's when the Lord was just about ready to wipe them out as a people each time, it seems. Now remember, this tabernacle was one that was set out of the camp because God would not dwell in the midst of them in his tabernacle because of their great sin by building the golden calf. And the Lord said unto Moses, how long will this people provoke me? Now, if we had followed their account closely up to this time, we would see that they had turned against God 10 times in the past 11 months since he brought them into the wilderness. 10 rebellions against God. This was the 10th one. How long will this people provoke me? How long will it be ere they believe me for all the signs which I have showed among them? Now these signs that God showed among them, he expected them to take these signs and use them as a means by which they would believe him. He didn't just ask them to believe and give them nothing to go on. He gave them some signs. Manna from heaven. Water out of the desert. All kinds of signs. And today, we too are not asked just to believe God, just out of the blue, just to believe. But we have a whole host of signs. We have infallible proofs of the things of God. We have all kinds of proofs about Jesus Christ, about what the apostles witnessed and saw and wrote, and how that all of these writings interchange with each other and dovetail and nothing conflicts. We have proof abundantly. And so when we don't believe, it's not because we just didn't see fit to take something on blind faith, but it's because we did not accept the proofs. And so God has a point. He's got an arguing point here for his case. He says, they have rejected the signs. How long will it be before they believe me for all the signs that I showed among them? I will smite them with pestilence and disinherit them and will make of thee a greater nation and mightier than they. So the Lord's conclusion is, let me just get rid of this people. I'll smite them with a pestilence. I'll disinherit them, and I'll make of thee a greater nation. He could start all over with Moses and Aaron. It'd be no problem for God. He started with Abraham. He started with Noah. He could start here with Moses. I'll make of thee a greater nation, he says. Now, here we see then the mediatorship of Moses coming to the foreplay. The true mettle of Moses is now tested. How would we react if we were in Moses' shoes? Wouldn't it be tempting to say, yes, these people are stubborn. They are rebellious. I think it's a good idea, God. Let's just wipe them out. Get rid of them. Let's start all over. Let's start with a clean slate. That'd be a real tempting idea. But where did Moses come in? If he's a true mediator, and if he truly loved the people, if he was truly in his office, he would do just what Moses did. He intervened on the part of the people. Verse 13, and Moses said unto the Lord, then the Egyptians shall hear it, for they brought up this people in thy might from among them, and they will tell it to the inhabitants of this land. For they have heard that thou, Lord, art among this people, and that thou, Lord, art seen face to face, and that thy cloud standeth over them, and that thou goest before them by day time in a pillar of cloud, and in a cloud pillar of fire by night. So the Egyptians heard what was going on. They knew, they were kind of had a feel for the situation. And so Moses' argument is, if you just wipe them out now, then it's going to be an argument for the Egyptians to say that you haven't done the people right. Now if thou shalt kill all this people as one man, then the nations which have heard the fame of thee will speak, saying, because the Lord was not able to bring this people into the land which he sware unto them, therefore he has slain them in the wilderness. And now I beseech thee, let the power of my God be great, according as thou hast spoken, saying, now Moses is appealing to God. He says, let your power be great, according to that which is your true nature now, saying, the Lord is long-suffering and of great mercy, forgiving iniquity and transgression, and by no means clearing the guilty, visiting the iniquity of the fathers upon the children unto the third and fourth generation. Now you see, the plan of God has a way where he can be patient, he can be long-suffering, he can have mercy without clearing the guilty. His way is to provide a way for a person to not be guilty, to get rid of his guilt. As long as the person has the guilt, then the government of God will not allow God to forgive and forget. But he provides a way then for the person to clear himself of the guilt. And that's what Moses is saying here. So in verse 19 he says, pardon, I beseech thee, the iniquity of this people, according unto the greatness of thy mercy, and as thou hast forgiven this people from Egypt even until now. You know, sometimes we get ourselves mixed up. We think God is a merciful, forgiving God. Therefore, he forgives me on my own terms. All I have to do is just present myself and I'm automatically forgiven. But the forgiveness of God is based upon his plan. Moses says, pardon them according to the greatness of thy mercy and as thou hast forgiven this people from Egypt until now. God has a plan for his forgiveness. And unless a person or a people follow that plan, they're not qualified to be forgiven by God. We have to go according to the government of God. He's got laws in his government. And laws that can't be transgressed. Principles that cannot be trampled down. And so as God is operating in his great government here, and we appeal to him, we have to come through the petition according to his laws. According to God's way, not according to our way. Who cares about our way? It's God's way that counts. I had a discussion with a fellow yesterday on the subject of baptism. He said, well, baptism is just a symbol. He said, it's not really necessary. It doesn't matter how you do it. It's just a symbol. And so I proceeded to try to show him, well, the Bible doesn't teach that. The Bible teaches that every case in the book of Acts was baptized, and baptism for the remission of sins. And baptism is an answer of a good conscience toward God and so on. And he said, well, I just don't see it that way. Well, my own thought was, I didn't say this, but my own thought was, who cares about how you see it? That doesn't change anything. I don't want to base my soul's destiny on how you happen to see it. I base my destiny on how God happens to see it. That's the way we want to do. And so that's the thing about this people. There was a way for them now to work this out. But it had to be according to God's plan, according to God's mercy. And we're going to see God's way just simply is not man's way at all, as we learn how God did work it out. And the Lord said, I have pardoned according to thy word. I have pardoned according to thy word. But as truly as I live, all the earth shall be filled with the glory of the Lord. Because all those men which had seen my glory and my miracles, which I did in Egypt and in the wilderness, and have tempted me now these 10 times, and have not hearkened unto my voice, surely they shall not see the land which I swear unto their fathers, neither shall any of them provoke me to see it. Neither shall any of them that provoke me see it. But my servant Caleb, because he had another spirit with him, and hath followed me fully, him will I bring into the land whereon he went, and his seed shall possess it. Now the Amalekites and the Canaanites dwelt in the valley. Tomorrow turn you and get you into the wilderness by the way of the Red Sea. So he's telling them they're not going to see this land. It's the adults who were the age of 20 or over. So he says, tomorrow you turn and you get into the wilderness. Well, we're going to get back to that subject in a few minutes, but let's go on a little bit more with this declaration that God makes. Verse 26, and the Lord spake unto Moses and to Aaron, saying, how long shall I bear with this evil congregation which murmur against me? I have heard the murmurings of the children of Israel, which they murmur against me, saying unto them, as truly as I live, saith the Lord, say unto them, as truly as I live, saith the Lord, as ye have spoken in mine ears, so will I do to you. Now let's pause here for just a minute. He says, how long will I bear with this evil congregation which murmur against me? You know, we see all the time people who really know the truth. They know a good part of the truth, but they just absolutely flagrantly disobey. They forget about God. They don't care whether or not they worship God. They don't care if they worship Him correctly or not. They never study. They just don't care about God. And you keep wondering, how long are they going to keep getting away with it? Just why does it seem that everything keeps going on with these people as though nothing were wrong, and you know that they have no regard for God? But see, what we don't know is what God is thinking. God doesn't talk to us today like He did to Moses and Aaron. And at that time He said, how long shall I bear with this evil congregation? He had threatened to destroy them completely now, at least twice. And Moses had intervened. And so he's still wondering, how long am I going to bear with them? So he says, so will I do to you. Your carcasses shall fall in this wilderness. And all that were numbered of you, according to your whole number, from 20 years old and upward, which have murmured against me, doubtless ye shall not come into the land concerning which I swear to make you dwell therein, save Caleb the son of Jephunneh and Joshua the son of Nun. But your little ones, which ye said should be a prey, them will I bring in, and they shall know the land which ye have despised. But as for you, your carcasses, they shall fall in this wilderness. And your children shall wander in the wilderness 40 years and bear your whoredoms until your carcasses be wasted in the wilderness. As for the number of the days in which you search the land, even 40 days, each day for a year, shall you bear your iniquities. Even 40 years, and ye shall know my breach of promise. I, the Lord, have said it. I surely do it unto all this evil congregation that are gathered together against me. In this wilderness they shall be consumed, and there they shall die. Now that's not according to our way of pardon and forgiveness, is it? God said, I'll forgive them. But His method of forgiveness was, they're going to stay in this wilderness. They're not going to see the land that was promised to them. They're going to remember the fact that because they had rebelled against me, they're going to have to pay for that. And their children are going to suffer as long as they're in this wilderness because of that deed. And their carcass will be strewn in this wilderness. Now, we might not think of that as forgiveness, but that's the alternative to God just completely wiping them out right there on the spot. He's going to let them live. But there are now a condemned people, a people doomed to die in the wilderness. And when you stop and think of it like that, really, what is life? What was life to them? Suppose a person died a few days before or later than they normally would have lived. They were doomed to stay in the wilderness. What does God maybe do to us today when we have rebelled against him and turned against him and turned against him, and then we finally get pardon and forgiveness. Maybe, though, we have channeled ourselves into a rut of some kind that we're not going to be allowed out of because of our past rebellions. Oh, yes, God pardons. He will let us live. And maybe even we can look to salvation. But who knows what God is doing and manipulating us because of our deeds. We see how God works here. And the men which Moses sent to search the land, who returned and made all the congregation to murmur against him by bringing up a slander upon the land, even those men that did bring up the evil report upon the land died by the plague before the Lord. That'd be 10 of the 12 spies. But Joshua the son of Nun and Caleb the son of Jephunneh, which were of the men that went to search the land, lived still. And Moses told these sayings unto all the children of Israel, and they and the people mourned greatly. Now Moses had to tell them what the sentence was. The sentence is, you'll never get out of this wilderness. God says you're going to stay here. You're going to die here. You're going to be buried here. Your carcasses will be left in this wilderness. And the people mourned greatly. Now let's go back to our account in Deuteronomy, the first chapter. And some of this is just going to be repetition, but we'll read through it. Verse 34 of Deuteronomy 1. And the Lord heard the voice of your words, and was wroth, and sware, saying, surely there shall not one of these men of this evil generation see that good land which I swear to give unto your fathers. Save Caleb, the son of Jephunneh, he shall see it. And to him will I give the land that he hath trodden upon, and to his children, because he hath wholly followed the Lord. Also the Lord was angry with me for your sake, saying, thou also shalt not go in thither. And we're going to come back to that verse in just a minute. But Joshua the son of Nun, which standeth before thee, he shall go in thither. Encourage him, for he shall go cause Israel to inherit it. Moreover, your little ones, which ye said should be a prey, and your children, which in that day had no knowledge between good and evil, they shall go in thither, and unto them will I give it, and they shall possess it. Now, an interesting thing to me is that the age of 20 here was the line of demarcation as to whether or not they would be allowed to go in. And he said they had no knowledge between good and evil. This seems to imply that the Lord felt like that they were not capable of making an intelligent, rational decision, a decision that would affect their eternal destiny. And so he didn't hold them for the decision not to go into the land. But as for you, turn you and take your journey into the wilderness by the way of the Red Sea. He told him, turn back. You go back. You stay in the wilderness. Now this verse 37 says, also the Lord was angry with me for your sake, saying, thou also shall not go in thither. I'd like to illuminate that just a little bit more. Back in Numbers 20, verse 10, we have that account given. Now this account happens, after they'd been in the wilderness for the 38 years or so, and they were now about ready to start their journey, really to go into Canaan, and they're in Kadesh Barnea, and there's not enough water. And so the people murmur. Verse 2 of Numbers 20, and there was no water for the congregation, and they gathered themselves against Moses and against Aaron. Well, down in verse 8, the Lord spake unto Moses, saying, take the rod, and gather thou the assembly together, thou and Aaron thy brother, and speak ye unto the rock before their eyes, and it shall give forth his water, and thou shalt bring forth to them water out of the rock. So thou shalt give the congregation and their beasts drink. And Moses took the rod from before the Lord, as he commanded him. And Moses and Aaron gathered the congregation together before the rock, and he said unto them, hear now, ye rebels, must we fetch you water out of this rock? And Moses lifted up his hand, and with his rod he smote the rock twice, and the water came out abundantly, and the congregation drank, and their beasts also. And the Lord spake unto Moses and Aaron, because you believe me not to sanctify me in the eyes of the children of Israel, therefore ye shall not bring this congregation into the land which I have given them. This is the water of Meribah, because the children of Israel strove with the Lord, and he was sanctified in them. Now let's notice for a minute for that reason, God didn't let Moses come in. He says, the Lord was angry with me for your sake, saying, thou also shall not go in thither. And let's look at that just a few minutes. The common conception is that the reason Moses couldn't go in was because he smote the rock with the rod rather than just to speak to the rock. The Lord told him to speak to the rock, and he did. However, the Bible does not say anywhere that that's the reason he couldn't go in, because he smote the rock. We learn here in verse 12 of Numbers 20 that he said, it's because you believe me not to sanctify me in the eyes of the children of Israel. That's the reason you didn't go in. Because you believe me not to sanctify me in the eyes of the children of Israel. Now, the smiting of the rock really didn't constitute disbelief, because no man who didn't believe would have smote the rock to make water come out. The rod was there for some purpose, and the purpose might have been to smite the rock with. We don't know that. But the reason was because Moses didn't believe God enough to sanctify him in the eyes of the children of Israel. In other words, up to this point, the children of Israel had turned against Moses several times. They didn't believe Moses. They didn't believe God enough to believe Moses could lead them. They looked upon Moses being a false leader. And they'd rebelled so many times over and over and over again until finally Moses got to the point, he and Aaron, that they didn't believe the people would be led in. They didn't believe that God would lead this people in. And so they lost their belief there temporarily. And God recognized this. He sensed it. And so he says, it's because you believe me not to sanctify me in the eyes of the children of Israel, therefore you shall not bring this congregation into the land which I have given them. It was because of unbelief. So originally, all those who lost their lives in the wilderness, it was because of unbelief. They wouldn't go in when God gave them the opportunity. And now here we see Moses and Aaron lost their opportunity also because of unbelief. So we can't stress the fact of unbelief hard enough. Strong enough. We must not suffer from the disease, the spiritual disease of unbelief. When we stop believing, when we get to the point that we're just kind of some kind of a fairy tale and we don't really believe it, we don't really commit ourselves to it, we wouldn't give our lives for it, then we've reached the deadly sin, the sin of the children of Israel, the sin of Moses and Aaron. And it's the sin that cut them out of the promised land. It cut them out of it. Well, God said, but as for you, turn you and take your journey into the wilderness by the way of the Red Sea. Well, we have another event that happens right here. Rather than do what God said, once Moses broke the news to them and said, you've been condemned to live in this wilderness for the rest of your lives. You're going to die here. Rather than take that, then the people saw that they really should have gone on into the land. Now that God is going to make them stay in the wilderness where they originally wanted to stay just a short while before, now he's going to make them stay. They don't want to stay. The people take back up their mind, they're going to go on into the land anyway. They're going to go in spite of God. Verse 41, then ye answered and said unto me, still in Deuteronomy chapter 1, we have sinned against the Lord. We will go up and fight according to all that the Lord our God commanded us. And when ye had girded on every man his weapons of war, ye were ready to go up into the hill. These people said, we have sinned against the Lord. Now, what they're really saying is, okay, so we've sinned. And that's why we're getting cut out, because we've sinned. Well, now we're going to admit our sin, and we're going to go on in. It's just like saying, all we have to do is make this confession, just acknowledge the fact that we've sinned, and we're right back just like we were. No problem. But it didn't work that way. You see how God's way of forgiving and pardoning didn't fit in according to the man's way. He could forgive, all right, but he was not going to let them go into the land. That was a stipulation that went along with his pardoning and his allowing them to live a while longer. You couldn't go into the land. They said, we're going to go anyway. Now, how much of this spirit crops up in us sometimes? We sin. We're wrong. And then when we get just stood down to the fact that we're wrong. We say, okay, I've sinned. Now I'm just going to go on. And maybe we have, you know, some repenting to do. Maybe we have some time of remorse that we have to serve. Maybe we can't just pick right back up where we were before the fall. And the Lord said unto me, say unto them, go not up, neither fight, for I'm not among you, lest you be smitten before your enemies. The Lord told him, it's not time to go now. You missed your opportunity. Don't go. Don't fight. I'm not among you. Now this tells us something about the warfare of God's people. When God's people waged war, and God directed them to go into war, He was with them and they came out victorious. But when He wasn't with them, they were just out there fighting a losing battle. When God wasn't with them, they would not win. So I spake unto you, and you would not hear, but rebelled against the commandment of the Lord, and went presumptuously up into the hill. Presumptuously up into the hill. It's probably the mountain of the Amorites, which is going to be the lower border, the southern border of the whole land they can inherit. They went on up presumptuously, presuming some things. Do we have any right to presume? Do we have a right to act presumptuously when we're serving God? When God's laid everything out for us right down to the letter, do we have any right to act presumptuously? That's the way these people are. They presumed that they could win the battle. They presumed that God was going to let them have this land. They presumed it was now their land. And according to those who've been in this area, as they went up the hill and as they got closer to Canaan, the land became more fertile. There was grass. There was grazing land. There was more water. There was more evidence of civilization. Abraham had trodden here. He dug wells here. There was the grapes and the fruits. And so there, you could see how that their appetite was just now being whetted for the land. They'd been in this wilderness for about a year now, and they were ready for the land. And it's ours. It's been promised to us, promised to Abraham. That's what this whole expedition is all about. That's what we're doing in the wilderness. That's why we left Egypt, was for the land. Now it's ours. We can see it. We're going to take it. They went presumptuously up into the hill. You can just sense the taste of victory they probably had as they got ready for this battle. They're going to take it. God said we were strong enough. Let's put our weapons on. Let's go do it. But you see, without God, everything changes. God said, I'm not with you. I am not with you. And the Amorites which dwelt in that mountain came out against you and chased you as bees do, and destroyed you in Seir, even unto Hormath. And you returned and wept before the Lord, but the Lord would not hearken to your voice, nor give ear unto you. He said, chased you as bees do. If you can imagine a swarm of bees after somebody, and how that person is running for his very life when bees are chasing somebody, this is the figure that's given here. They didn't amount to anything in this battle. They were not able to take the land. And you know, it's the very same way with us in the church. If we decide we're going to have church anyway, we're going to have a church regardless of what God said, we're going to do it our way, and we're going to have a church. We're going to meet, we're going to assemble, we're going to worship like we want to, and we're going to force God to let us have a church, to give us the promised land. God's not with us, we're not going to be successful. We might put on the weapons and we might go through the warfare, but we're not going to win the victory. And sometimes I think people in the church, just their whole attitude is one of spite. We're going to do it in spite of everything. We're going to do it. We don't care what God says. We don't care what you say. We don't care what your objection is. We don't care what your interpretation of the Scripture. We're going to do it. We're going to go up the hill. Because God's promised us that land, it's ours, and we're going to take it. But remember, you only get it on God's conditions. Only on God's conditions. Not on your own conditions. Well, that's an interesting phrase here. So, ye abode in Kadesh many days according to the days that ye abode there. Now, that's a very ambiguous saying. How long were they in Kadesh? The Lord told them in verse 40, but as for you, turn and take your journey into the wilderness by the way of the Red Sea. And so as we begin the second chapter of Deuteronomy, he says, "Then we turned and took our journey into the wilderness by the way of the Red Sea, as the Lord spake unto me." That's what God told him to do. You turn. Now this area, you can look at it on the map and see it's probably about 100 miles or so from Kadesh down to the Red Sea. He said it was an 11 days journey. They spent the next 37 years plus in this area, in the wilderness. And so little is said in the Bible about this time that they spent. So little is said. In this first verse of the second chapter, he takes the whole 40 years in right there, practically. Or the whole 37 and a half years, whatever amount of time that was. He takes all that time in. And he doesn't say anything about what happened. As you study in the book of Numbers, between the 19th and the 20th chapters, there's the 37-year time. There are 17 stations named in the book of Numbers that they stayed at during this 37-year trial. And it seemed that they stayed at each station a little bit progressively longer than the other one. But God did take care of them in the wilderness. For we look on down here in the 7th verse, he says, "For the Lord thy God hath blessed thee in all thy walk, in all the works of thy hand. He knoweth thy walking through this great wilderness. These 40 years the Lord thy God hath been with thee, thou hast lacked nothing." Other scriptures tell us that their clothes didn't wear out and their feet didn't get weary. He provided them with the water and with the manna and so on. So he took care of them. He pardoned them. The stipulation was, you don't get out of the wilderness alive. And so very little is said about this inglorious period of the Israelites' history. It was marked by their carcasses and by their tombs rather than by any great deeds that they did. Don't have any great deeds here. He continued to give them portions of the law. He continued to deal with them. But for the most part, very little is said about this part of their history. There are some events, though, that did happen that we'd like to look at. Two or three things here. I want to go back to the book of Numbers. And in Numbers, the 15th chapter, I think there's an interesting thing there taught. Numbers 15, beginning with the 27th verse. "And if any soul sin through ignorance, then he shall bring a she-goat of the first year for a sin offering, and the priest shall make an atonement for that soul that sinneth ignorantly, when he sinneth by ignorance before the Lord, to make an atonement for him, and it shall be forgiven him. Ye shall have one law for him that sinneth through ignorance, both for him that is born among the children of Israel, and for the stranger that sojourneth among them. But if the soul that doeth aught presumptuously, whether he be born in the land or a stranger, the same reproacheth the Lord, and that soul shall be cut off from among his people." So we see here that God had a law of two kinds of sin. One was the ignorant sin, the person who sinned out of ignorance. Now he sinned all right. He committed a wrong, but there was a way where he could make an offering and get forgiveness of his sin. But the other one was this presumptuous sin. That is, a person who knew that it was wrong, and he flagrantly and willingly went ahead and did it in spite of the fact that he knew that it was wrong. The presumptuous sin. "Because he hath despised the word of the Lord and hath broken his commandment, that soul shall utterly be cut off. His iniquity shall be upon him." Now we have an example of this presumptuous sin. "And while the children of Israel were in the wilderness, they found a man that gathered sticks upon the Sabbath day." Now that was his sin. He gathered sticks upon the Sabbath day. "And they that found him gathering sticks brought him unto Moses and Aaron and unto all the congregation. And they put him in ward because it was not declared what should be done to him." Now see, the law said he would be cut off from the congregation, but it didn't say in what manner he'd be cut off. So here was a test of this law now. They put him in ward so they could determine what was to be done. "And the Lord said unto Moses, the man shall be surely put to death. All the congregation shall stone him with stones without the camp. And all the congregation brought him without the camp, and stoned him with stones, and he died as the Lord commanded Moses. So you see here then just such a simple act as gathering sticks on the Sabbath. It wasn't how grave the act was. It was whether or not it was a presumptuous sin or a sin done through ignorance. If the man didn't know any better, then he could have made an atonement. But he evidently knew better, and he violated the law of God anyway. Now just think of that. That's a pretty simple violation to just go out and gather sticks on the Sabbath day. You know, they weren't to work on the Sabbath day, and we might not even think of gathering sticks as being very much work. But it was enough that it cost this man his life. He was stoned to death. Then we have another event that is a very outstanding event that happened during the time they were in the wilderness. And that's the event of Korah, the rebellion of Korah and those that he influenced to be with him in that rebellion against Moses and Aaron. And we read about that in the 16th chapter of Numbers. And this is a rather lengthy account that we'd like to give of this rebellion of Korah. So I believe rather than get into that at this time, we're going to close our lesson for now. And then next time we want to get on into the rebellion of Korah. But after we finish that and get back into the second chapter of Deuteronomy, then we're going to begin the narrative of their leaving Kadesh Barnea for the second time after their 40 years wanderings, or approximately 40 years, and they're going on up then to go into the land of Canaan that God promised them. This time it would be without those who had rebelled and murmured against God the 37 years before, because they had been allowed to die and left in the wilderness. So we'll conclude our lesson at that point and begin next time then with the story of Korah and his rebellion against Moses.